text or WhatsApp your view to Greg on 086 60 25,000.
Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Hopefully your Monday's going well. It is the 1st of September 2025. Could you ask Greg to raise the possibility of a scheme being started, looked at? The old FAST scheme where people on job seekers or people getting community service were tasked with the upkeep of the streets. This can be a kind of a controversial suggestion. It has been made in the past. I'm sure people involved in certain schemes are involved in the upkeep and maintenance of their areas. Would you extend it to FAST schemes? The problem is we have a very high level of employment, even in this county, you know, so it's not like when there was 15% people unemployed, it's much less now. So I'm not sure if the capacity is there for that, this type of project, or maybe it is, I don't know. It all went wrong when the council got rid of the man and the shovel job, which did the job of 100. Some pen pushers changed the system. Another, the council just wants people to work for nothing. The whole Tidy Towns organisation is working for nothing. Councils want to outsource everything to save money. Have you ever tried to get a council official to be accountable for anything? It's past the book territory. Councillor Noel Jordan had already brought forward a motion on all roads equipment and machinery and the procurement of same by the council rather than private contractors. Greg, it's interesting that this county gives out constantly about refugees being here, yet they are the ones that I see on a Sunday morning out collecting the rubbish in the morning. Okay. Take unemployed out on the scheme to do the cleaning of the streets, says a listener. Now, as I say, people are unemployed for a very for various reasons. Some of it can be health related or what have you, but maybe there is an element there. I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. A caller says, and maybe this is something will resonate with mums and dads and guardians out there, I'd like your opinion on this. My daughter attends secondary school, currently in her second year. Now the school has been doing the free book scheme this couple of years, but all of a sudden now there's an administrative charge, which I might add is around about the same amount as the book rental scheme would have been if not for the free book scheme. They're stating now if this €70 is not paid, the child will not receive her locker. Surely this can't be done given the free book scheme and payments are supposed to be voluntary. So it says, dear parent guardian, looking forward to welcoming your child to school. A gentle reminder, all admin fees must be paid in full before the return, as lockers will not be allocated to students who've not paid. Another gentle reminder then on the following Thursday. And let's see. Yeah, that last text is in relation to something else. So no locker, no fee. So pardon my ignorance, do you actually, you obviously need a locker, don't you, for your books? I can't rack my brains as to what the story was with the boys or what have you. I never had to pay for a locker, but €70 fee for a locker to hold the books, it doesn't feel like a free book scheme, and that doesn't feel like a voluntary payment either. If you don't pay it, you don't get it. It's an administrative charge. That's a lot of lockers, a lot of €70. I don't know what the fee's actually for. I don't want to mention the school because I don't have enough information to do that at this point. But maybe you've received that bill as well. Are you resisting paying it? Can you get away with not paying it? Or do you have to have a locker and therefore it's €70 you have to find? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. Why isn't the president elected democratically? Because I, as a citizen, do not have a TD or council who represents who I want. Interesting. So effectively, your candidate would struggle to get on the ballot paper, I presume. Like I could say to you, yes, but ultimately you decide by your vote. But you're effectively saying, aren't you, that you could be left with a list of candidates chosen by TDs, councils, etc. And the person, none of those people represent you. So, yeah, I've said that before. Others seem to think you need some control on him. Greg, I was working at about 30 primary schools in the past year. Secretaries are loved by the kids. They are the essential positive communications bridge between the teachers and the kids and parents. Every time I met them, with a smile so human and friendly, I'm sure if the kids were asked should they get parity, they would all say yes. And I agree. And what you're saying is right. It's a very important role. We heard it from about caretakers last week about how, you know, they're there to meet the kids, make sure the pathways are clear, maybe help with roads crossings. Secretaries are there smiling when you turn up. That's very, very important what they do. But outside of that sort of like a devotion-y type job description, they do very, very critical work, especially the secretaries, but not particularly in a different way, to actually keeping the wheels turning, assisting a working principal, for an example, processing pay, dealing with emails, phones. So, you know, proper stuff. And I'm not saying what you're saying isn't proper stuff, but there's this kind of, which I don't think helps their cause, this sense that they're sort of like the smiling community face of the school. Yes, of course they are, but they play critical roles in the upkeep and ongoing work within the school as well. You know, really proper office work and all that kind of stuff as well. I hope I haven't shot myself in the foot. I hope you get the point I'm trying to make there. Okay, we're going to have another voice on the Bunkrana Tidy Tans, Downing Tools Effectively, over the controversy of road sweeping, etc. in Bunkrana, and much more after we take this quick break. Former councillor in Bunkrana, Nicholas Crossan's with me now. Good morning, Nicholas. Sorry for holding you over till after 10.
No problem, Greg. Sorry about that.
No, it's our fault. Listen, Nicholas, just before we get into what you think could be done here, take us back to town council days. Was it that seen as a better way of keeping Bunkrana clean and tidy in terms of who had sort of control over it, budgeting, etc.?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, Greg. Just before that, look, I'd like to congratulate the Tidy Towns on the wonderful work they do. They've been doing this for year in, year out, and get very little thanks for. They're not done it for thanks, they're done it for the benefit of their town and their community, and I want to thank them, Greg. But the Tidy Town, or the town councils, were abolished in 2014. And the minister that abolished them, the Right Honourable Phil Hogan, in his wisdom says the town councils would not suffer, would be entitled to every service that they have now when they were taken over from the county. So one of those services that Bunkrana provided, and in their wisdom many years before, the Bunkrana Town Council employed people to street the sweeps 7 days a week. And Bunkrana was kept, along with the Tidy Towns, they kept immaculately. And we had that service, which was kind of, in the last few years, trying to draw back on that. But under the 2014 agreement of putting people first, Bunkrana was and should be still entitled to street sweeping.
Now, as it turned out, those resources were spread across all of Inishowen. So, as far as you remember from your time in the council then, what was the street cleaning protocol, the street cleaning system that ran alongside the excellent voluntary work Bunkrana Tidy Tans do?
As it was up to recently, it was a private company. In the latter years, it was a private Donegal County Council. Many, or Bunkrana Town Council, many years ago, had people. But Bunkrana was a smaller town then. But in recent years, we had, I'm talking the last 20-odd years, we had a street sweeper that went around, swept Bunkrana Main Street, St Mary's Road, and the main arteries coming into the town 7 days a week. And then the various estates in the town were swept on a periodic basis then, just to keep them tidy and people might know about them, do a sweep up, push the stuff out the side of the road. And Bunkrana was in good condition.
So what changed as far as you understand? Because, as I say, I'm slightly hamstrung because Bunkrana Tidy Tans are just leaving that statement there and not speaking publicly beyond that at this point. What has changed then that has, as far as you understand, brought the Tidy Tans initiative to this decision?
All right, you just can't expect people to do the same thing day in and day out.
But when did that 7 day service stop? Sorry, maybe that wasn't clear in my question.
Sorry, I'm just not quite aware how long ago this. It's a few years back. The 7 day it went down to a 5 day, which and listen, Greg, I'm not in the winter time. October, November, December, January. 5 days, 5 day service was good for Bunkrana. Good enough for Bunkrana. We got our main arteries swept. And Bunkrana was in good condition. But April, May, June, July, August, September, where we have visitors come in, Bunkrana was too good with visitors this year.
Good.
We need to keep Bunkrana tidy because people are coming. They're not coming to towns now that are dirty. They want to, when they park the cars or whether there's cleanliness about the town, there's a feel-good factor about the town. And Donegal County Council and the Tidy Towns working in conjunction were able to do that. Mm. But when you leave it to a community group, an organisation, and each year it is expected for the tidy towns to do more and more. And it's just, it's not on.
Yeah, but the council did put out a service to tender. There were no tenders received, so they've had to go down another route. Do you have any sympathy for the council in that regard?
I fail to see how nobody could come back in that. I'm not au fait with this.
Well, there's only two companies, right? So I'd be very interested, whether on the record or off the record, they indicated as to why. Was it the terms of the tender, or maybe it was down to their own current workloads? I don't know. But go ahead.
We could beat about the bush all day long, but it's about one thing. And
money.
It's about money.
So what do you think of this piece of equipment that's been bought? We've got the push version or the ride-on version, but the Phenon seems to be of the view
that...
Yeah.
No, Greg, a billy goat is grand if you're tidying up around a couple of houses or something like that. For a town the size of Bunkranna, I'm sure... I think those things
do the open spaces in shopping centres. Do you know that sort of a way? To take on a full town and its surrounds.
But not a main... Not, if you're taken from the roundabout, at least from the roundabout in Bunkranna, beside the Inishowen Gateway Hotel, right up the main street. When you come over the bridge, do you turn left to go over by the shore, or do you keep going straight, or do you go over St Mary's Road or go up the main street? I mean, like it's a fob off.
You won't do it in the rain either. I mean,
We want the service we were promised, and the service we were entitled to before 2014. We must look at the big picture.
I just think with this billy goat, firstly, there doesn't seem to be any protection from the elements in it. The ones I Google all seem to be battery operated. I hope they didn't get a battery operated one, because you won't get halfway up the street. But we'll see.
I have seen one in operation once. But as you say, it's for inside a mall or doing a few houses. Yeah. It's not for a main street or for a town.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that. And the bags on them are tiny. Like, you'd be constantly changing the bags.
Some of the refuge in Bunkranna Main Street after the weekends, you'd have to say to yourself, what is the mindset of people?
Well, we're not going to fix that one. We don't have the time to try and fix that one. I don't get it. I don't understand why people throw stuff around their ass.
I've seen it umpteen times. There are bins around the shorefront in Bunkranna. Beautiful. One of the nicest walks maybe in Ireland. And somebody goes up and folds a pizza box in half and sticks it in, halfway into the bin. So then the next person, that bin's full, I'll not use that there. And nothing in the bin.
Right.
And if he said anything, which I did, I got a lot of words that you couldn't use in Highland Radio thrown at me. I said, push the bloody thing into the bin, would you, to the road?
I think anyone with a rep, with a bin in the kitchen knows as soon as you put a big piece of cardboard in, the capacity of the bin's halved. All right. So, your suggestion is to scrap free parking and bring whatever money that brings in to put it to the street cleaning budget.
No. I didn't say scrap free parking, Greg. What I did say before I left the council, I did say what we should reinstate what we had at the first 10 or 15 minutes.
Back to 10, okay, sorry, my mistake, yeah.
No, just and look at the big picture in this. In the past 12, 14 years, and I'll have to say, and people listen to this, the only charges that stays in a town that doesn't go to Donegal County Council, that doesn't go to Lifford, are parking charges. If you look at the towns where they have them, Bundoran, Donegal Town, Ballybuffet, Letterkenny, Bunkranna, those charges stay. So we have lost out almost €3 million in charges that we could have spent in Bunkranna Town. €3 million in charges that we could have spent in Bunkranna Town over the past 12, 14 years. And I'm not saying that we crucify. Keep the charges 50 cents for your parking for an hour. You get 10 or 15 minutes free. If you want a paper and maxi run in or down to, you don't need one down at McKenna's or a gun for an ice cream or whatever the case may be. But a half an hour parking, Greg, if you see the traffic warden, I pull onto Main Street in Montana, the traffic warden's walking up and I pull on and I said, well, I have 3 quarters there because she's going to go around the town, so I'll be back here. Then when she comes back then, she has to take my number at the time she comes back. So I could pay parked half an hour and I've got another half hour parking.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this, and it's not the popular thing, but until the counsellors, like, we have to go on and sometimes we had to make the easy choices and they were out and we all ran for photographs and all, but sometimes you have to make the hard choices. People come to Bunkranna, visitors come to Bunkranna, and we're delighted to see them coming. Come to Bunkranna, they use our facilities, they use our walks, wherever they want to go, and it doesn't cost one red.
I get you, and but at this, I understand that that would create some revenue, but the revenue budget, the Donegal County Council's revenue budget last year was 186 million. You know, I mean, surely...
And you take 70% out of that going on wages, salaries and pensions. Well, doesn't leave a lot for spending, Greg. You know, you're talking about 30% of that, so you're down then
140 million. Yeah, okay. But still, there's like local roads maintenance improvement, 19 million. National roads maintenance improvements, 1.5. Yeah. Local authority housing maintenance, 9 million. Public convenience maintenance, 577,000 a year. I'd love to know where that money's going. Outdoor.
Well, I would love to know as well. I do know where
577,000 euros spent last year on public convenience maintenance. That's public toilets. These are the toilets that people can't use half the time. Over half a million.
Yeah.
Outdoor leisure areas operations. You know, that's your play parks and all that. 2.2. So listen, there's some good money going some places, but blooming hell, there's some money going.
There's only a few ways we can raise. There's only a few ways we can raise as we put on a local tax, or we put it onto the ratepayer. And I'm sure Kieran McKenna was on there a month ago. He doesn't want to be paying any more rates. Or neither does the pubs up the street or the ice cream shops or the paper shops or whatever the case may be. They're strapped with wages at the moment, with high costs, with charges. We can't put any more money on the ratepayers in Donegal.
Yeah.
We've got a few good months in the summertime. We're hanging on during the wintertime just to survive and hoping that we get a break in the summertime. And it's very, very unfair. And the services that we're providing in Buncrana, the shops are doing a great job. But they just you just can't expect the ratepayer to pay year after year.
Okay, I get you. I mean, I think that's the frustration. All right, Nicholas, listen, thanks very much for your insight. Nicholas Crossan, former Mayor, there. Yeah, €577,716 being spent this year on public convenience maintenance, which I presume is the cleaning of toilets, their general upkeep. I don't see public toilets that kind of align with €600,000 odd of spending. Maybe I'm being silly and naive, but my word, that's a lot of cash spent on public convenience maintenance, given the state of our toilets. I'm joined in studio now by Phelan Molloy of Glenswilly, who is the incoming president of the Irish Natural and Hill Farmers Association. Good morning and congratulations, Phelan. Great to have you in.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners.
So talk to us about the Irish Natural and Hill Farmers Association, who they represent.
Yeah, the Irish Natural and Hill Farmers Association was basically set up to represent farmers on the poorer type land and in upland areas. Now, we would have a lot of members down the west coast of Ireland. It was set up in 2015. And the reason it was set up was that the people that actually set up the Irish Natural and Hill Farmers Association felt that they weren't getting proper representation from the established farming organisations.
So the IFA, did you feel the IFA were looking after the big boys?
That would have been the, very much so. The people that actually would have been involved at the IFA level at the time felt that they just weren't getting the proper hearing to address the problems that were confronting the smaller type farmers. And that was the reason why the Irish Natural and Hill Farmers Association was actually established.
Are your farmers mostly sheep farmers, beef, cow farmers, a mix?
The sheep and suckler farmers, basically. Now, we would have a small number of people that would be involved in other farming activities, but by and large, it would be the sheep and suckler sectors that we would be representing.
Now, every time I read about it, apparently, you know, lambs are making record prices, you know, fat lambs, skinny lambs, the whole blooming lot. Depends if you watch the whole day, you get a fortune for a skinny lamb in the morning and, you know, maybe not quite so much for a fat lamb in the evening. Are things not good?
Yeah, from a market point of view at the moment, you know, the prices are good. But unfortunately, the reality is within farming that income can be very volatile. It would depend on market conditions, maybe from year to year.
And use a price takers, not price fixers.
When you go to the mart or to the factory with your animal, you actually have to take the price that's offered on the day. So from that point of view, I think the whole area of supports through CAP and that is critical for the, you know, the continuance of farming activity and the type of areas that our people would be farming on.
There seems to be a lot of people involved in farming now. You know, when there's a lot of sort of small, medium-sized farmers in our county, but they're packing it in. You know what I mean? And also in terms of dairy farming, beef farming as well, you know, the amount of animals being slaughtered is going down all of the while. You know, year on year, this is happening really, really quickly, right? So even though there is some good money there at the moment, people are still leaving the industry. And I think it's, you know, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, is it that farmer with, you know, 40 sheep or 50 sheep, or is it the bigger boys as well? Or what's going on? Who's exiting and why?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, one of the reasons why farmers are exiting is the actual farm gate price that they're getting, and a lot of cases wouldn't meet their costs. Now, there's historical reasons for that, because in the past, the payment system was actually based on a historic payment, and there was a time when 80% of the payments went to 20% of the farmers. So the average farm size in Ireland is about 30 hectares. Now, if you're on poor quality land, you know, the income that can be generated from that is actually limited.
Mm.
But when those farmers were actually starved of the resources to help them improve their farms, you know, invest in their farms, unfortunately, that just wasn't available down the years. And that is one of the reasons why, if the cost of production actually exceeds what the return is, it will force people effectively out. Now, if you just look at the sheep sector, you know, that's one of the areas that's actually targeted as being, you know, a very low income in that. But in the past, wool was a major contributor to the economic return from sheep farming. But because of the decline in the wool market, that has actually forced prices down as well.
You could have made your money on the wool almost, like, and not literally, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you know, I've heard of cases where people would have kept their wool, maybe sold it, and they were fit to buy a tractor and that in the past. Now, unfortunately, that is gone. We are doing a lot of work at the moment to try and revive products that can be developed on wool. So that's an area where you can actually add economic benefit to that output.
Are the majority of your members business people? In other words, the farm is their business, or a lot of your members, I'm not saying it's a hobby, right? Don't get me wrong. But, you know, if the truth be told, if they didn't have a love of it, they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, there's two sides that definitely, I think for anybody who's involved in farming, there is a love of it, and you have to be interested, because otherwise, you know,
I see people get excited about, you know, a lamb being born, feeding it with a bottle for like 3 or 4 months, you know, chucking nuts into it left, right and centre, and then it getting 155 quid at the mart. You know,
yeah.
You could only do that if you had a love of it, right? That's not a business.
It's actually, a lot of people would describe farming as a profession. You know, you're dedicated to it.
Of course they are, and I'm not questioning the dedication, don't get me wrong. But I'm on about, if I'm going on Dragon's Den, right, and I'm saying this is my pitch, you know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't for CAP and other schemes, there's no money in farming.
Yeah, and because the fact that the farm, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the average size of the farm would be 30 hectares, there is a necessity to have off-farm income to actually support that.
Yeah.
Having said that, if you look at it from a broader perspective and what that farming activity actually contributes to the overall economy, and say in Donegal, I know just from CAP payments alone, there's about 128 million actually coming into the county.
Which is massive.
Which, from an economic point of view, because the benefits of that income are actually spread across all sectors of the communities.
Yeah.
There was a report done in 2019 to the fact that for an income, say, coming into a farm in a certain area, the benefit of that can be found within 35 kilometres of that recipient's home. So, you know, if you just look at the number of small businesses, you have the march, you have the co-ops, that's all generating economic activity.
Yeah.
So it's important from that perspective.
This is a question, not a statement, though, Phelim, and enjoy your wee glass of water there. I'm having you busy chatting here. But the farming is retracting very quickly in this country, livestock farming. I would say it's not retracting in the big boys, in inverted commas, you know, the people who have an awful lot of land, awful lot of cattle. I think they're still at it, right? But if you look at the amount of animals we're slaughtering last month versus the year before, like, can it be saved at this point? I almost feel like when we're arguing the benefits of farming, we all know it. I know it. You know, people very close to me are farmers. Don't get me wrong. I get this. I just feel that battle has almost been lost. I think there's a lot of farmers who have said, I'm not hanging on anymore. And the smaller that voice gets, right, and as farming gets consolidated into the big boys, most likely further south, then the INHFA's voice quietens, the IFA's voice quietens. Do you get where I'm coming from? So it's almost like death by a thousand cuts, but it feels to me like we're very deep into that process already.
Yeah, but I think it's important that you look at the overall context and what actually agriculture delivers for the rural economies and the employment that's actually created through that. So there is that spin-off. Now, from an individual farmer perspective, and it's something that's actually mentioned in the new CAP plans, where payments would be directed towards, you know, the disadvantaged areas and the more extensive type of farming systems, which the suckler and sheep sectors would actually be extensive systems. So therefore, there is a recognition even at European level that it's absolutely critical that these farming systems are actually maintained from a rural development point of view.
Of
and not alone that, but just from an environmental perspective as well, because there was a report published in a number of years ago for the EU Agricultural Committee, and it was around the threat of abandonment of ANC-type land. Now, most of our lands in Donegal would be ANC-type land, and it highlighted the economic benefit from a social point of view, and it also highlighted the environmental impact, because there was an excess of 63 habitats that were actually benefiting from the existing farming practices. So from an economic and social perspective and environmental perspective, it is critical that that farming system is actually maintained. Now,
I just don't believe, unfortunately, that Europe is going to be prepared to fund farming in this country for those very, very legitimate reasons, you know, to keep the caretakers of our designated areas of natural constraint. As they should be. I just don't believe that's an argument that's going to resonate in Brussels.
The documentation that we have received on the CAP from 2028 to 2034 actually does highlight the benefit of maintaining farming and those more disadvantaged areas. And there are paragraphs. Now, those documents were actually released just before the summer recess. There's still a lot of work to be done on them in terms of teasing out the pros and cons of what's actually meant by certain issues. But it is recognised. Mm. And even earlier on this year, there was a document prepared that was called the Strategic Dialogue on the Future of EU Farming. And that was one thing that came through very strongly, was that it was critical from, you know, the different perspectives, economic, social and environmental, that the farming systems were actually maintained. So there is that recognition out there because, the problems that are arising now, you know, from a very, very intensive agricultural systems, you know, from environmental point of view. So the farming systems that are employed on these types of lands are actually beneficial across a number of headings.
I get you. In relation to CAP post two, take a drink of water there. It's all right. I'll elongate the question. In terms of CAP, there's a bit of CAP kite flying now for 2028 and beyond. Major concern: farmers on the state pension wouldn't get CAP. Now, I don't know how many. We have an aging farming population, right? 65's young now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Thankfully, people looking after themselves. How big an impact would it be if pension receiving farmers weren't to get any CAP payments at all?
Yeah, that is one of the provisions actually that's included in the documents, and that proposal that those farmers receiving a state pension would be discontinued from receiving EU payments. Now, we have made strong representation on that, and from a workable point of view, if you just look in Donegal, around 30% of the farmers could potentially be impacted by that.
I knew it would be high. I didn't think it would be as high as almost
that's
one in
what's
three.
Estimated at the moment. So if you look at the, you know, the drop in income that would actually result from that, from an economic point of view. So I
mean,
know
how
some
many 62, 63, 64-year-olds listen to us right now are going, stuff it, I ain't rolling the dice. I'm going to try and get out as best as I can right now. You know, these types of measures, even if they're only just sort of being talked about, are going to influence people's decisions potentially.
And I think that's a job that has to be done. You know, and we will actually be engaging widely with our members over the next period of time, just to keep them fully updated on what the progress has been made and the CAP consultative talks, which I know we have a meeting now due on the 18th of September. But that is one major issue. Now, I have been in touch with, you know, MEPs and that, and the feeling is that that is a plan that will not actually work out at the end of the day, because there are major issues around it from a fairness point of view for all sorts of reasons, not just purely financial.
But discrimination feels like one to me.
Yeah, that's
to be honest with you, on the most basic, you're entitled to get a state pension, but just because you're entitled to get a state pension, how on earth could it be legal for the need to be precluded to get EU funding? It doesn't, you know, that, because it's only about your age. I know you're receiving a pension, but that's almost by the by. So how important is it that we have strong voices, not only like from representative groups like yours, but you're not going to be around the table when CAP 2028 and beyond is being adopted. How important is it that the likes of the Department of Agriculture are on board and are making this argument on our behalf? Or again, like farmers and the factories or farmers and the marts, are we just going to be sort of deal takers? Can we influence this?
Oh, we can, yeah. Because, you know, from a political perspective, I think, you know, obviously politicians are going to have a major role in making sure that there is balance and fairness and whatever proposals are actually agreed. So we are engaging as of now with politicians just to brief them. A lot of them will be very well aware of what the consequences
but
are.
But national policy has to be about protecting farming. If it's about AI, if it's about data centres, if it's about farms of solar panels, we have a problem. You know, the nitrates derogation we are getting, it's going to be... Now, I know it's not as big a factor for us up here as it might be down south. Yeah. That's going to go. Right. The reality is because I think senior government members here have pretty much conceded that with comments I've made, though they haven't said it directly. So, you know, there has to be a national commitment to the grades, all grades of farming in this country, because if that is not the case, then the argument won't be as strong as it needs to be as CAP's negotiated.
Yeah. And if you look at, you know, from a food production point of view,
food security.
The farmers in our county, they're producing food, stock or grazing on grounds. That forage has been turned into protein, which goes in then to feed human beings. So from that point of view, you know, our farming systems actually do contribute to food security. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very important that is actually remembered.
And, you know, a lot of the reason why the squeeze is going to be on farmers down the line in different areas of farming is because of emissions, which is to the west of us, the United States have said, you know, stuff that we're going to be drilling as much oil as we can. The Conservatives in Britain now effectively have said they're going to get rid of caps and start drilling and exhausting the oil they have off their northern coasts. And yet here we are going to be squeezed in the middle chatting about cows farting for the next 5 or 6 years. Pardon my language, but you know what I mean? The conversation has moved so far forward, and that has had such a huge impact on agriculture in this country. And to our west and east, they're forgetting about it. They're saying, stuff it, drill, baby, drill, to quote Trump.
Yeah. And because of the farming systems that we practice are extensive, there's very low inputs. So therefore, you don't have the same, you know, output of meat or whatever else. You know, if you, again, just go back to the sheep sector. a sheep would actually could be deemed to be a sequester of carbon, because in every 1 kilo of wool that's produced, there's about 175 grams of carbon captured in that. So therefore, that is actually a positive from the point of view of the environment. But, you know, if you just look at other areas that are impacting on the environment, one of the biggest threats, and it's been well publicised in the research, every week been published on, and that is the impact of microplastics. Huge, not alone just from a human health point of view, an environmental point of view, right across the board. So our policy is that we try and replace those synthetic fibres with a natural fibre. And wool is one of the very, very obvious and environmentally friendly alternatives there. So I think there's too much of a focus on what actually maybe is happening on the small farm, where and the bigger picture, the production of synthetic fibres as a massive contributor.
Yeah, I know, but that's going to be a big argument to get across the board. But I understand exactly what you're saying. The random one, I've lots of questions in, but just this is one caught my ear or eye. Are we still measuring radiation levels in the hills and lower ground in Donegal since the Chernobyl incident in April 86? And are they decreasing?
No, that was actually a program that was undertaken after that. But and I'm not aware at this point in time that there's any testing that hasn't been. I don't think it has been necessary, because obviously it would have reached a stage where they have discovered that the residual radiation levels had disappeared so much that it wasn't necessary.
That's
not something that would be an issue as far as we have been, come across.
Okay, Phelan, listen, you've a busy... Is it a year term?
It's a two-year term.
Right? You've a busy couple of years ahead, because that'll bring you just right into the jaws of CAP, and by the time you're wrapping up, we'll know really what CAP 2028 and beyond looks like. Hopefully, the likes of your organisation gets plenty of coverage, not just in, you know, the local press, but national press as well. Yeah. I think sometimes we're seen as, you know, country boys just yapping, and we don't get necessarily the platform nationally that we deserve, you know, when we're talking about rural issues.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very important that, you know, that there's good engagement between the Lake of Iris Nature and Hill Farmers Association and local media and that, because I think that the more that the public in general understand about the role that agriculture plays and their everyday lives, not just from a farm, but their own everyday lives, I think the better understanding out there of what the farmers are actually doing. And I think that's very, very important. And we look forward to engaging on an ongoing basis with, you know, Highland Radio as the talks on the CAP progress and how progress has been made on the critical issues that are confronting us.
Yeah, 100%. Because, you know, often, and it suits governments around the world, often the misunderstanding suits it. So farmers are dismissed as, you know, always getting this, that and done. Same as teachers are, but your summer holidays. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily tell the full picture. So I think we need nuanced conversations. Best of luck with your term, Phelan. You will be taking up the position formally at Percy's French Hotel, Strokestown, on the 11th of September.
11th of September.
Right?
The National AGM is on the 11th of September. So from then on... And
don't get cancelled between now and then, will you not?
Unlike a president that was inaugurated earlier on the year, I won't be signing any executive orders on the first day of the presidency.
All right, well, sure, we'll see what you do. We'll see what you do pull out. All right, Phelan Molloy of Glen Swilly. We'll be back with more after a break. Just to remind you, we're broadcasting live on Sunday, this coming Sunday, between 12 and 2. We're live from the London Irish Vintage Show. See if there's any late flights. Get over there. It's a great day out, you know. There's brilliant live music. There's lots of machinery and farm animals and tractors and lorries and all manner of things. And there is an outdoor concert and dancing and all that type of stuff. If you're listening in and around London, do try and get along. But if none of that works for you, then please tune in to the outside broadcast from the fields next Sunday from 12. We've got loads and loads of guests and also celebrating the lives of Donegal people over in London, what they're doing, their amazing achievements. the fantastic work they do in supporting the Irish community, charities, etc. Tiny Vaughan's the man behind all of this, of course, and he's been running this show incredibly successfully for years and years and years, and there's four great charities that are going to benefit from it on the day. So we're heading over on Saturday afternoon, and we'll be broadcasting live for you on Sunday from 12 until 2. So if you want to get a sense of what's going on over there, do. We always are sort of tapping up the diaspora and, you know, saying, you know, what are you doing over there? And I love it when we get an opportunity to go over there, you know, and celebrate what they're doing and their lives and their connections with Donegal and the rest of the country. Here's a novel solution to Buncrana Street problem. Why don't council officials forego their annual St. Patrick's junket and use the money to employ a council street sweeper? Well, that's a different argument. And again, it's a little bit like the farmers and the teachers argument. I think the cost of those trips has greatly reduced, and there is a strong argument for a financial return down the line, and all of the information on those trips is available. I could get shot for sort of, you know, not taking maybe the populist point of view on that, but I have looked at it. And as I say, the only the people that need to go generally go. And I think at a local level, you know, they are very useful in drawing funds and people back to the county. But we can all agree to disagree on that one, of course.